day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, I'm really glad you've decided to join us. So we're about to hit the two-year mark of the pandemic here in Michigan and, of course, all across the country. And although a lot of us are cautiously hopeful that we may be entering a less severe stage of the COVID-19 pandemic, there's still no question that so many of the inequalities and governmental failures that made the pandemic so bad in the first place still haven't been fixed. If the current pandemic surges back again, or maybe when the next deadly pandemic hits, we're still really vulnerable in a lot of ways. And if we don't learn the right lessons from what happened over the past 2 years, we're going to be in real trouble again. But here in Michigan, top officials say we did learn some lessons early on in the pandemic, and we did help fix some of the biggest disparities that made the first waves of the pandemic especially devastating. Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist chairs the Michigan COVID-19 Task Force on Racial Disparities, and that group is going to release a new report today that details the way the state responded to these racial disparities and the difference it was able to make. Lieutenant Governor Gilchrist joins me now to review that report. Garland, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Stephen, good morning. It's great to be here with you and your listeners as always.
Yes. So remind us what the racial disparities looked like during the pandemic, especially in the beginning. And for those of us who live in Detroit, the largest majority African-American jurisdiction in the state, it looked different and it was more devastating than it was in many other parts of the state. But let's go back to that time and talk about how this played out.
Absolutely, Stephen. And this is important context for this conversation. And just, you know, I'm saying this and describing this to you as a Black Detroiter, as someone who lost 27 people to COVID-19 in my own life. This is very real and very personal to me. In the beginning of the pandemic's presence in Michigan, at least when we first detected our cases, we saw a staggering racial disparity. We saw that, you know, while Black folks statewide make about 14% of the people who live in Michigan, in the first 2 months of the pandemic, we accounted for 40% of the people who died of COVID-19. So I'm talking March and April and into May of 2020. 40% of the people, almost half of the people who passed away from COVID-19 were Black Michiganders. Now, the only reason we were able to even track that is because Governor Whitmer, our then chief medical executive, Dr. Jonae Caldoun, and myself prioritized making sure that we could measure the race and ethnicity of people who tested positive for COVID-19 and who passed away. And so once we had those data points, we recognized that we needed to act and act quickly because this level of disparity was unacceptable in this pandemic. And so 1 month after the pandemic started in early April of 2020, the governor via executive order established the Michigan Coronavirus Task Force on Racial Disparities, and she asked me to be the chair of that effort. And we immediately seated 26 amazing Michiganders from all walks of life, from racial and ethnic groups across the board, Black Michiganders who worked in healthcare, who worked in labor, youth advocates. We had representatives from our Native American and Indigenous community, Latino community. We had faith leaders who came together to figure out how we could reduce this mortality rate disparity, as well as learn from it to reduce other racial disparities when it came to health outcomes.
Yeah. So what were the things that we did? What are the things that made a difference in trying to bring that mortality rate in particular down to a more reasonable level?
Well, I'm proud of the progress that we made as a state. You know, this task force worked with every state department and agency and community organizations and partners across the state of Michigan. And what we found is that focusing on this problem enabled us to make progress. We got to the point by doing things like we distributed via task force initiatives more than 6 million free masks, including child size masks. We administered more than 24,000 free COVID-19 tests through neighborhood-based community partner organization efforts to have community-based testing sites in places where people of color live all across Detroit and all across the state of Michigan, to have them entrusted place for people to go get tested and ultimately to go get vaccinated as well. And we also really proud of this innovative program we did in the fall of 2020, where we actually funded directly 30 community-based organizations to address different elements of the social determinants of negative health outcomes, including higher susceptibility to contracting or dying from COVID-19. And we saw those organizations make a ton of progress to where at the end of the year, Black folks represented less than 3% of the COVID-19 deaths. I mean, to put this in perspective numbers-wise, we were able to reduce the new COVID-19 cases reported from 176 per every million Black Michiganders to 59 by the end of 2020. We brought the number of probable COVID-19 deaths reported for Black Michiganders from 21, almost 22 per day, to 1 per day. It shows you that if you focus on the challenge, you can make progress. And we're proud that progress has held even through the surges with Delta and Omicron. And so it's fragile, but we're holding on.
Yeah. I also want to talk about the larger context of all of this. So there were things that could be done during the pandemic to try to address the disparities that were playing out in the pandemic. But of course, those disparities have real connections to cultural and societal disparities that we've lived with forever. And one of the things that I know you and I have talked about is the importance of pivoting at some point to really dealing with those in a different way. And that's just as critical when you talk about the next surge under COVID-19 or the next pandemic that comes down the road. Talk a little about that context and how aware the administration is of the need to start really more aggressively dealing with them.
Yes, Stephen. You know, in the beginning, the task force, we had two charges. The first was to deal with this immediate mortality rate disparity. And then the second one was to connect to longer term, bigger efforts to reduce these disparities when it came to health outcomes and access to opportunity. And we really think that the learnings that we've gotten, and that's what the report describes, the infrastructure put in place, these neighborhood-based, really public health outposts, not just for COVID-19 testing and for COVID vaccinations, but for conversations about how to be healthier, the partnerships with federally qualified health centers that have been funded across the state of Michigan, the mobile testing and vaccination infrastructure that now can be used to bring mobile health services directly to hard to reach places. The partnership that we launched with the Racial Disparities Task Force and Detroit Public Schools to become a direct vaccine provider for COVID-19 vaccines that we announced a couple of weeks ago. That's a foundation for a new relationship between people, the school nurses that are in their neighborhood schools, and the state health department. And we think that these will give us more tools to be able to deal with some of those social determinants when it comes to everything from health misinformation to food insecurity and food deserts and lack of food access. And some of the things that we were able to help on the policy level deal with is dealing with how, for example, EBT and food assistance programs could be more broadly available to buy more types of food, that the limits to those could be lifted due to waivers we saw from the federal government so that people would have more access to food and healthy food to be able to live healthier lives as Michiganders. So we think this is absolutely a starting point, but one of the things that we've tried to glean from this pandemic are ways that we can save lives, ways that we can reduce poverty, ways that we can connect people to opportunity. And we think this is an important, you know, as you said, pivot point for how the state of Michigan approaches it. And it's frankly put Michigan in a leadership position in the country.
I'm talking with Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist about a new report due out today that will detail the racial disparities that we saw unfold during the COVID-19 pandemic. So I want to talk about also where we are now in places like Detroit, where we still, I think, have some work to do. Of course, the pandemic is not as virulent as it once was, but we still don't have the number of people in places like Detroit who have been willing to get the vaccine, get both shots of the Pfizer vaccine or one shot of the J&J, or to get the booster that that was recommended for people last year. That also leaves us with some vulnerability, I think, if there is another COVID surge or if there's another pandemic. Talk about the efforts that still need to be made to make sure that Detroiters do get vaccinated.
This is absolutely top of mind, Stephen. You know, look, I don't want anybody else to get COVID. I don't want anybody else to die from COVID. And we have tools in the toolbox that are super, super effective. But straight up, we need more people to make the choice to get vaccinated. And one of the big motivations for the partnership that I described between the health department and Detroit Public Schools Community District is that we want to find as many trusted allies in the community, trusted resources, trusted people and institutions to be able to have these conversations one-on-one with people in the community. And so this school partnership is grounded in the fact that people trust the nurses who work in our schools. And so they can help answer families' questions about why they and their children can take the opportunity to get vaccinated, and then literally have that trusted individual who's been trained, who's been authorized to be able to then help them and administer the vaccine directly. And as you know, we have more than 100 Detroit Public Schools Community District schools. And those are, frankly, neighborhood hubs that are available to every person who lives in those neighborhoods. And so as we scale up this program, we started at 7 schools, and we're going to be branching out very quickly and ramping that up very quickly. That'll be yet another place where people can go, where they can talk with someone who they trust and who they already have a relationship with about this. And we really think that's what it's going to take to continue to move move the ball forward in terms of getting more people, and particularly more Black folks and more people in cities like Detroit vaccinated. And so this is really important. This was a priority for the task force to get this stood up. I'm really thankful to the professionals at the health department and the district, the board for helping to make this happen. I think it's going to have an impact. And again, this is about laying a foundation for better health outcomes overall through this first engagement on this conversation about COVID-19. Hmm.
So I know you do have to go, and I want to thank you up front for the time today to talk about this. But Jen on Twitter asks whether the governor calling on Detroit and Flint schools to return to in-person during the pandemic, did that disproportionately affect these districts when we were trying to keep things under control? This question about the value of in-person versus virtual, the questions about safety, did we rush, I guess, too much to try to get back to in-person? Did that put more families of color in places like Detroit and Flint at risk?
Well, let me answer this very personally. So my twin third graders are Detroit Public Schools Community District students. Mm-hmm. And I saw the challenges of remote learning play out in my own family differently for my twins. Mm-hmm. One of my kids managed it okay. One of my kids really struggled with remote learning. And so I think that there is consensus amongst education professionals and amongst parents and children that in-person learning is the optimal way for kids to be able to get what they need from our education professionals, from our schools. Now, having said that, we've worked really hard to make sure that schools had the tools they need, information, understanding, and infrastructure they needed to be able to manage school safely, to be able to decrease the risk for education professionals and students to the extent that they could. And I think DPSCD has done the best it can to manage that, and like a lot of districts have. And so I think the calculus has been that we want to try to make sure school can happen safely for the ed professionals and the adults. And yes, we wanted that to happen as soon as possible because we were concerned about the unfinished learning happening with kids. And I think what we've seen in Detroit Public Schools specifically is that the district has done its best to manage it. As far as sort of outbreaks in the schools, there have been some limited ones where we're going in a good direction. And it also is part of the reason why we launched this partnership with the district to give yet another tool to happen directly and directly be available to people, to families, to students right there in their school buildings. That just like the district has scaled up the testing infrastructure, scaling up this ability to administer vaccines is going to help us manage this risk so that kids can be learning in person with that's in a way that's best for them and ultimately for our families as well. So, I think that we made the decision and tried to do so responsibly. And I think that this is going to bear fruit with our children being able to learn in the way that they can learn best.
Yeah, yeah. I promise to let you go after this last question. What do you think of Ketanji Brown Jackson being nominated to the Supreme Court? First Black woman is what she would be on that that highest bench in our country.
Stephen, I think it's incredible. You know, I appreciate President Biden for making a commitment to doing this and then carrying through with it. I think Judge Brown Jackson, I'm so drawn to her experience, both as a Black woman, but also as a public defender. Mm-hmm. You know, that is something that is so rare to have people with that experience be present on the Supreme Court. And as someone who's led the criminal justice reform efforts for our administration, just that perspective and that lens when looking at the law is so important. And I think it's going to lead to more equitable decisions, decisions that are responsive to the needs of more people and more communities. And so I'm super excited about her nomination. She's someone who's been approved with bipartisan support in the past. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that she has a path toward confirmation. And then I'm excited about the history that she will make and the impact that she will have for generations as a Supreme Court justice, and frankly, giving, you know, my family, my daughters, someone else to look up to at the highest levels of the government here in our country is important progress for us to make.
Yeah. Okay. Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, always great to have you here on Detroit Today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Stephen. Everyone, please be safe.
When we come back, we are going to talk more about President Joe Biden's nomination of the first Black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm going to talk with the Boston Globe's Kimberly Atkins-Store about the selection of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. We also going to want to hear what you think of this historic nomination to the Supreme Court. What do you think the GOP reaction will be to this? How easy do you think her confirmation will be? And what kind of justice do you think she'll make on our nation's highest court? Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.